Welcome to Paranormal Almanac. With your host, Kurt Sandvig. That's right, I'm your host, Kurt Sandvig, and on this week's edition of Paranormal Almanac, let's talk even more about sea monsters. Probably not a monster. But first, as always, let's do some shout-outs. Shout-outs going out to Duran, Nikki Loves James, Cobalt Slayer 42, Lori, Alicia, Rebecca, Esteban.
The phrase that pays is super otter.
Esteban, Ann, Stephen Scher, Jennifer, Heather G. This user is totally not a skinwalker. Zuzus, What's It, Nico Scher and the Mouse. Mark, Tortuga, Hannibu, Mike from Jersey, Jay Bizzle, Andy, Tracy, Virginia Mailman, Tony, Jason, Vicky, Crow, Clay, Buzz, Libido Works, Glacier Main, Isabel, Jen, Stacy, Amber, Tracy, Kelly, Joe, Menace the Beast, Kickass Magic Robot Webcomic, Sandy, Pagebrook, Kausch, Bentman666, Andrew, Hey Howdy Hi, Scott, Andrea, Melody, Vicky, Vanessa, Marisol, GamerFan, Laura Pitts, Dan, Todd, Jamie, and Elijah Hendrickson, Chuck, Nanashi, Jade, Carolyn, Manning, Jade Mark, Autumn, Veronica, The Lawrence Strawn, Hey Howdy Hi, Lawrence, Joe, Jeff T, Hey Howdy Hi, good to see you last weekend, Lindsay, Jerry, Paula, Bob, Cindy, Dorian, Audra, Isabel, April, Russell, Lauren, Will, Robin, Carrie, Ashley, Cindy, Hayden, Zozo's the Demon, Seth, George, Alexandra, Ian, Ricardo, Kenneth, Tim, Trudy, Art Muffin, Sherry, Void Tech, Elizabeth, Becca, Jake, and the Beasties, Alicia, Roger, and Liam. With three special shout-outs, one to Joshua, just because he's a great guy, and the regular two. One, as always, to Joe Teague. And one, as always, to my boy Stitch. I miss you a lot. All righty, let's keep on keeping on. Let's talk about the T Public giveaway. Yeah, that's right. All this month. That's right. The month of May, which we're at like the 19th, I think. So it's coming up. It's closing up. But Kate from T Public, they are so freaking awesome. They said, hey, we want to give a free t-shirt to two of your listeners. And I said, yes, please. That sounds amazing. So I said, I know how I'm going to do it. I'm going to do a phrase that pays. So somewhere in this episode, perhaps it's already happened, you'll find this week's phrase that pays. So if you haven't already entered the contest, just email paranormalalmanac@gmail.com, subject phrase that pays, and then in the body of the email, just whatever the phrase that pays for this week is, and boom, you're entered. It's that easy. The end of the month, I'm going to plug them all into this funky kind of thing that they, it's like a giveaway thing that you can find online. You can Google giveaway things. You put all the names in there and you spin a thingy and it goes, and then it picks a winner and then it picks the second winner and boom, bam, boom. You guys have won free t-shirts from tpublic.com. Now you might be saying, hey Kurt, what do your shirts look like, man? I haven't seen your shirts, Kurt. And to that, I say to you, whoa, then what are you doing? While you don't have to stop listening to this. Keep listening to this episode. But while you're listening to this episode, why don't you just like Google on over, pick up your fancy computer, or your phone, or however you find the internet, and go to tpublic.com/stores/paranormal-almanac. That's tpublic.com/stores/paranormal-almanac. There you go. There's like five pages of shirts to pick from. Some amazing, if I do say so myself, styles. And you don't have to wait to win. You can go there. You buy. We just click on it. Yep, I want one of those. And then boom, buy it right then and there. Maybe you might be saying like, well, Kurt, I don't want, like a t-shirt, but I want to buy something to support you. To that I say, thank you. That's very sweet. And also, they got more than just t-shirts, man. Hold on, I'm going to it right now. I want to I'm going to be you for a minute. I'm going to be like, okay, tpublic.com/stores paranormal. Oh, my God, there's local paranormal dash almanac. There's a lot. There's even some shirts that aren't exactly, the first few aren't exactly paranormal almanac related, but just skip the first five if you don't want one of those. But go to, look at that. There's an 8-bit paranormal t-shirt. That's pretty cool. So if you were saying like, well, I like it, but I don't want a t-shirt. So you click on it. And you scroll to the bottom, and they go, hold on, man. What do you want? You want a hoodie? No? You don't want a hoodie? How about a sticker? Want a cool freaking sticker? Put on the back of your car, Paranormal Almanac. Show all the paramaniacs out in the world that you're a paramaniac yourself. Yeah, you can do that. You got a kid? You want to get them a t-shirt? We can do that. How about a mug? Yep. Tank top? Sure, why not? Crew neck sweatshirt? We got it. Long sleeve t-shirt? Well, of course. Baseball t-shirt? Yeah, I like sports. Not really. Phone case? Sure, there you go. How about a laptop case, man? How about that, peoples? Magnets? Got it. Kids hoodies. Kids long sleeve suits. Kids body baby suit. You got a kid body baby suit right there. You need a baby body suit. They got one. What else do you got? Oh, well, they got wall art. Yeah, they do. Notebooks? Oh, that's cool. Pillows, totes, tapestries, and pins. I'm telling you. They got it all, and then some. And, like I said, there's like 5 pages of shirts, man. Besides the fact, like, they have sales all the time. Like, all the time. If you're like, ooh, I like that shirt, but it's $22. They have sales all the time. It's freaking great. And when I put up a new style, it's automatically on sale. This is turning into a big TeePublic commercial. But anyhow, you know the deal. Listen to that phrase that pays.
It might have already happened.
Alrighty, and let's keep on keeping on, because we got a lot to get to, so let's go right on into paranormal news. See, I told you it was time for paranormal news. All righty, the first story in paranormal news. Ex-U.S. Air Force captain says UFO attacked a nuclear missile base and damaged weapons. That's right. Let me get to the meat of this story. Retired U.S. Air Force captain Robert Salas has shared his experience of spotting a UFO on the show National Geographic's UFOs Investigating the Unknown. He revealed how a UFO attacked his nuclear missile station. He said that 10 missile silos were kept in a subterranean bunker when reddish-orange lights were seen moving towards them. He also added that they have deactivated all the missiles, and the guards had to escape from the location to protect themselves. It's that age-old story, which is crazy that that's an age-old story, but I've told many numerous stories just like that in the past. So, up next in paranormal news, it's cool and all, but where's the there we go. Oh, they put it behind a paywall. Well, basically, what it was is it was a story about how they're no longer flying saucers. Now they're like silver balls and weird, all the weird shapes, the tic-tac shapes and everything that UFOs were. It's actually a really neat story. I'm bummed they put it behind the paywall, but since they did, F them, let's move on. Stanford professor says aliens are 100% on Earth. U.S. is reverse engineering downed UFOs. This one's coming out of Australia. A Stanford professor who has researched unidentified aerial phenomena for the U.S. government has made a stunning claim about aliens. He says he's researched unidentified aerial phenomena for the U.S. government, and he says it's been here a long time. Extraterrestrial intelligence, that is. It's been here a long time, and it's still here. His name is Dr. Gary Nolan. He also claimed that whistleblowers who have worked on reverse engineering downed craft had recently given classified testimony to Congress, creating, quote, a hornet's nest in Washington. Dr. Nolan, who's a professor of pathology at the Stanford University School of Medicine, who has published more than 300 research articles and holds 40 U.S. patents, made the bombshell comments during a talk at the Salt Eye Connections Conference in New York on Thursday titled The Pentagon, Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and Crashed UFOs. That is a bold claim and freaking awesome. We need more people with the credentials that he has, smarter people than me is what I'm saying, to make these kind of bold claims to kind of push the government into finally doing disclosure. Alrighty, up next in paranormal news, a story that I can't get to load. Let's try that again. What the heck? There we go. Car-sized UFO rotates through sky, prompting speculations and conspiracy theories. Now, this one has a video, so I'm very excited to watch this video. As you know, I've not watched it until the episode airs. I've not watched it. That's a text from The Sean Bishop. Thank you, The Sean Bishop. But I am recording an episode. Let's see. I've not watched the video yet, and it's still loading, so I'll continue to talk, I guess. Footage has been posted online of a UFO described as the size of a car floating a few hundred feet between Gomersall and Burstall in West Yorkshire. There we go. Here it is. Let me see if there's any sound. Doesn't seem to be. It's big. It looks like a ginormous balloon. It's a video pointed up the sky, obviously. There's a black, almost like airplane-shaped balloon thing or angel kind of thing, but it's very big. You can tell just from it looks very big, I'll put it that way. And it's slowly floating from the right to the left. I don't know. It's hard to say what that is, to be honest with you. There's nothing that I can see that can tell me what the size is. You know, there's nothing in the foreground or the background. I don't know, but it says footage of a large rotating UFO has led to a range of theories as to what it might be. Oh, here we go. That's a close-up of it. Still looks like a balloon to me. But it's weird shaped. It's shaped almost like a Space Invader. Remember the old video game Space Invaders? Like those things that came down? Wink, 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 those things? Looks kind of like that. That was the worst impression of Space Invaders ever. Let's see. A member of the public filmed a floating object as a sword approximately a few hundred feet in the air. Nope, you don't get commercials now. A few hundred feet in the air between Gomersall and Burstall in North Yorkshire at around 11:30 a.m. on Thursday. Yeah, it's neat. I don't know what it is. To me, it just looks like a balloon, but I don't know what shape balloon that would be. It looks like a ginormous balloon, but who knows? Maybe it's one of them Chinese spy balloons. Alrighty, up next in paranormal news, terrifying Loch Ness monster spotted in... Whoa, I gotta start this one over. Take two. Pretend you didn't hear that. Terrifying Loch Ness monster spotted in recent video footage. Is this proof the beast exists? See why I wanted to start that one over? Great headline. I mean, it's a catchy headline. A creature, which appeared to measure around 10 feet in length, could be observed coming to the surface of the water. And I've been wanting to watch this video as well. There it is. Let's see. Do you have any audio? Doesn't seem like it. Nope, doesn't seem like it. Oh, yeah. Wait, go back. I want to see that again. Okay, thank you. It's the lock. I guarantee it's going to be Ian O'Fadigan. You son of a bitch. I'm betting money now. Yeah, it's big. It's right there. It's really big. It's really cool. I don't know what it is, so let's find out more about this story. The footage belongs to Ian O'Fadigan. This article is wrong. He says, who set up cameras which record lake activity for this very reason. I don't think Ian set up the cameras. But again, I won't know until I talk to him. So, Ian, Booby. Booby's a good term, by the way. Call me. Let's have your people call my people, because I want to talk to you, my friend. Alrighty, up next in paranormal news. Loch Ness monster, not a monster, hunter says, I thought this job would be easier. Not Ian O'Fadigan. His name is Steve Feltham, or Feltham. He has dedicated his life to solving the mystery of the Loch Ness monster. Good on you, still not a monster. He gave up his job and sold his home in Dorset, moved to Doris, on the shores of the Loch in 1991. Now, after more than 30 years of searching for Nessie, he said he thought the task would have been, you know, a little bit easier. He made his first sighting of something unexplained within his first year of search and had hoped to make further sightings soon after. He told BBC Radio... Oh, man, this guy must fucking hate Ian O'Fadigan, man. He's been doing this for 30 years, and Ian O'Fadigan's, like, at home, like, eating chips, watching this on the computer, going, like, there he is. There's Nessie. There's Nessie again. Spotted Nessie again. And this guy, Steve's just like sitting next to the lake like, oh, you son of a bitch, Fadigan. Anyhow, let's see. Oh, I just broke that. That's a bummer. Anyhow, he said he told the BBC Radio Good Morning Scotland program, I had one glimpse of something like a torpedo going through the water. I did think this job was going to be easier as I had a sighting the first year and I thought it wouldn't be long until a second sighting would come along. He said, and that's where I'm stopped. At that moment, still waiting for that second glimpse of something unexplained. Oh, this is getting sad. Because I'm here full time. I speak to hundreds of people who do report something that we can't identify. His dedication to his search saw him named Ambassador of the Year at the 2016 Highlands and Islands Tourism Awards. Alrighty, hold on. Hold on. Alright, I would love a Parapod Award, don't get me wrong, but apart from Ian O'Fadigan, nobody talks about Nessie more than me. I want to be named Ambassador of the Year or, you know, Podcast Ambassador of the Year at the 2023 Highlands and Islands Tourism Award. Come on, people. Someone make that happen if you could. That'd be cool. Look, I love Nessie. I want nothing more than for Nessie to be, you know, found, not harmed, and people go, yep, Nessie's real. Now please leave Nessie alone. Also, not a monster. So why did Mr. Feltham? Because he moved there? I can't afford them. Look, if I could afford to move there, I would. When that place was up for sale, like it was right up against the lock. It was like a church with like a graveyard or whatever the hell it was. If I could afford that, Rum and I would be there right now having drinks with Ian O'Fadigan because I'd be like, dude, just come over, man. Just look out the window. You don't have to go look online. Just come on. Be a pal. Have some rum. Not the dog. The drink. Let's see. Previously been recognized by the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest continuous vigil hunting for the Loch Ness Monster. What the crap? Maybe I got to get this guy on the show. Let's see. All right. Yeah, that's about it. Good on him. Keep going. I'm sorry. I hope you see Nessie again. Don't let Ian O'Fadigan get you down. There's enough Nessie to go around, people. It's all right. Alrighty, up next, paranormal news. Man, I gotta get going here. It's gotta get to the story. Louisiana man says he communicates with Sasquatch telepathically in Cassatchie Forest. Boy, I butchered that headline. Basically, a Louisiana man says he communicates with Sasquatch telepathically. That's why I didn't skip this story. He says, there are Sasquatches among us. It's a matter of paying attention. Oh my God, hold on, let me look around. Hand of fate. No, nothing around me. For many years, there have been numerous claims of people seeing a Bigfoot or Sasquatch in the Alexandria area of the Cassatchie? I don't know, forest. It's a forest, it's in Alexandria. I don't live there, come on, back off, people. In a recent interview with Alexandria's The Town Talk, a Sasquatch researcher tells reporters there are indeed Sasquatch in that forest, and he says he's communicated with them telepathically. He doesn't give his real name, only going by Claude, and he says that Sasquatch are all over Louisiana. It's just a matter of paying attention and seeing one, to actually see one. He says that he can sense when the Sasquatch is around. For several years, Claude has been communicating with a few of them telepathically. Like the Sasquatch, he found peace and healing being out in the forest where he loves to camp. They talk about all kinds of things, including who they are, where they're from, and what their lifestyle is like. Okay, how about you give us those answers then? Let's see. He says the Sasquatch refer to themselves as people. They actually feel like the term Bigfoot is derogatory. Sure, why not? He says it's something. It's Bigfoot. It's not like Littlefoot. He says his first telepathic encounter was with a female Sasquatch who initiated contact with him. Aw, man, where's like I got? Hold on. If I'm gonna do this story, I'm gonna do this story right. Not really porn music. That's better. Hold on. There we go. He says his first telepathic encounter was with a female Sasquatch who initiated the contact with him. The female Sasquatch said, "Don't come in here," as he approached an area in the forest where she was nursing her young. Oh, yeah. He asked her why she had not communicated with him sooner, and he tells him this was the answer. Because your mind is too busy. From the time humans wake up until the time they go to sleep at night, their minds are constantly in motion, man. You wake up thinking about what you didn't do yesterday and what you need to do today, and it's just snowballs. It gives us a headache. We don't do that. We don't have to. We just wanna fuck. This is terrible porno music. This is YouTube's version of porn music? Come on, man. I wanted like chicka 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 wah wah. Oh, that's better. Yeah. Anyhow, Penthouse Forums, you know what happened next. I took my pants off. She wasn't wearing any pants. And then we fucked. We fucked long, we fucked hard. And it was hairy, like 70s Bush hairy. And I liked it. All right, that's enough of that noise. Sorry, I had to. That guy's story is just getting too good. I had to do it. Sorry, last one. I apologize for everything that just happened. Last up in paranormal news. Let's see, another guy saying Sasquatches are among us. It's a matter of paying attention. But I'm afraid that's going to devolve into more Sasquatch porn stuff. So let's wrap up the paranormal news bag. And, fuck Spotify. Let's take a quick break. We are back. Sorry, I had to take a drink. That sexy talk was having some fun with my throat there. We are back. Alrighty, I wanted to go back to one of my favorite topics, sea serpents, lake monsters, not a monster, you know, just big-ass things that are seen in water. I love them. Why do I love them? Because they're historical. It's not just, like, one guy in a pond in, like, Nebraska, and he's like, holy crap, there's a sea monster. No, these things were written about so much that, as you probably know, They put them on maps and said, you know, here there be monsters. Like, for hundreds of years, people have been seeing stuff in water. And I've done a few episodes about this topic. And hell, I even have a cryptozoology degree. But while doing this episode, or prepping for this episode, I either forgot or I never knew that the study of both sea serpents and lake monsters is called Dracontology. That's right, Dracontology. Dracontology is the study of sea serpents and lake monsters. That's worth your money for this episode alone. Dracontology is a term sometimes used to refer to the study of lake monsters and sea serpents. The term was coined by Jacques Boisvert in the early 1980s. Good job, Jacques. Hey, as someone who's coined my own phrase, the world's first para-influencer, I like it when people like go, you know what, this thing needs a term, and I'm gonna give it one. So, here are a bunch that fit into Dracontology, and let me just tell you, before we overfished and, you know, basically screwed up the oceans, there were tons of big-ass fish and creatures living in it, and this is honestly, God's honest truth here. I seriously think that some of these sea creatures were real and not just like mistaken identities of like, you know, like giant turtles or walruses or whales or oarfish or narwhals or skinny dipping pirates. I really think there were ginormous creatures that, you know, like were just living plentiful because we weren't there fucking up all the oceans and whaling and fishing and all that crap. I mean, if you look at the photos of people that were, like, fishing in the Caribbean and the Bahamas and stuff in, like, the 1950s and the 40s, they're pulling up these ginormous sunfish that are, like, the size of a car. There are ginormous things that, who knows, they may be still living way out in the ocean away from man and, you know, rightfully so, but they might have died out because, again, we just kind of messed with the ocean too much. But the ocean's a big place. As you know, we're still finding crap there left, right, and center all the damn time. So who knows? Maybe they're still out there just waiting to be seen again. But I will say, they were seen a ton in historical records, ship logs, books, letters home. They were talked about quite a bit. And again, not all of them can be, you know, easily dismissed as, you saw a turtle, dude. Calm the hell down. It wasn't a sea monster. It didn't rise out 100 feet into the air and smash down and destroy your... It was a turtle. It was a little turtle. You looked down, you were like, whoa, what the crap is that? And for some reason, you didn't shoot it and eat it like everybody else did, but calm down. So anyhow, there are some that can't be, I don't know. I kind of got off the rails here. You know what I'm trying to say. All right, for this first one, let's go way, way, way back to Newfoundland in August of 1583. That's right. Just like I like when newspapers can be used to corroborate paranormal stories and UFOs and Bigfoot stories, I like when historical documents can be used to corroborate eyewitness sightings of sea serpents. Alrighty, August 1583 was the final North Atlantic voyage of Sir Humphrey Gilbert when he and the crew of the Golden Hind, yeah, his name of his ship was the Golden Hind. Well, anyhow, when he and the crew of the Golden Hind saw a tusked lion-like sea monster, and it was also seen by their sister ship, Squirrel. I'm not making this up. It's just Squirrel. It's not like the Squirrel or the Mighty Squirrel. Nope, it was just Squirrel, which I got to say, I kind of like the name of that ship. So anyhow, where was I? Let me pause right here to say, yeah, I know this sounds like a walrus. I know immediately you're like, it's a tusked lion-like sea monster. Yeah, it's called a freaking walrus. Well, the problem with that there is, Mr. Jumping Ahead in the story, well, get this. Gilbert was familiar with walruses, not like sexually. He just knew what they were. So much so that he actually wrote about one in one of his earliest English writings, pamphlets, things, whatever you want to call it. He said that a walrus was a beast as big as the bison, which hath two teeth like an elephant and liveth most in the sea. So he knew what he was talking about. You know, it was like, I saw something. There's this ginormous freaking sea monster. It looked like a lion with ginormous tusks, but it's not a walrus. Alrighty, so back to the thing. Back to the sighting. So unfortunately for the golden-hinded man himself, Gilbert died during the return voyage. So it was Edward Hayes, who was the owner of the Golden Hind and chronicler of the journey, who wrote, "At which very instant, even in winding about, there passed along between us and towards the land, which we now forsook, a very lion to our seeming, in shape, hair, and color, not swimming after the manner of a beast by moving of his feet, but rather sliding upon the water with his whole body, excepting the legs in sight, neither yet diving under, and again rising above the water, as the manner is of whales, dolphins, tunnies." I don't know what a tunny is. What the hell is a tunny? Hold on, I want to find out what a tunny is. We'll get back to his story in a second. Press pause on that one. Everybody remember where we were? Let's see, a tunny. It's the annual singing competition broadcast on live television. I don't think that's it. Tunny, any variety of prickly pears? I don't think that's it. The hell's a tunny? Well, come on. Fish? Let's see if there's a... Oh, yeah. Here we go. A little tunny, also known as the false albacore, little tuna, a bonita, or erroneously as the blue bonito. All right, I get it. So he says the manner of whales, dolphins, tunnies, porpoises, and all other fish, but confidently showing himself above water without hiding, notwithstanding, we presented ourselves in open view and gestured to amaze him. Wow, they gestured to amaze him. As all creatures will be commonly at a sudden gaze and sight of men. All right, calm it down. Not that many creatures give a shit about men. Thus he passed along, turning his head to and fro, yawing and gaping wide, with ugly demonstration of long teeth and glaring eyes, and bid us a farewell, coming right against the hind. Oh, yeah. Coming right up against the hind. He sent forth a horrible voice, roaring and bellowing as doth a lion, which spectacle we all beheld so far as we were able to discern the same, as men prone to wonder at every strange thing, as this doubtless was, to see a lion in the ocean, sea, or fish in the shape of a lion. What opinion others had thereof, and chiefly the general himself, I forbear to deliver, but he took upon bonum omen, sure, rejoicing that it was, well, it doesn't fucking matter. Yeah, he saw a giant sea monster, and he loves to talk. So that one's crazy. Again, there's a guy that knew the wildlife of the area, knew all about walruses, and I assume Eggman. That's a little Beatles joke for you. And he didn't have a clue what the hell this creature was, is what I'm saying. So, yeah, man. That first, right off the bat, cool. Sounds like a sea serpent to me. Let's jump ahead to 1635 to the River Don, when historian John Spalding, who wrote the Scottish Anal is when you tell the girl her ass is the lock and your dick is nest. It doesn't matter. Anyhow, John Spalding wrote in the Scottish thingy called History of the Troubles and Memorable Transactions in Scotland. Well, he wrote about a dog-headed monster with four limbs, a tail, and a mane of hair that had entered the River Don and wasn't just spotted for a couple of seconds by, you know, like one insane person. No, it stayed around the bridge at Aberdeen for 2 full days. Let me say that again. 2 full days, this ginormous thing, dog-headed monster with four limbs, a tail, and a mane of hair. What? There is no creature that swims around all the time with four limbs, a tail, and a mane of hair. But it was there for 2 days at the Bridge of Aberdeen before, you know, just swam away. Now, when sightings of the Loch Ness Monster, not a monster, when sightings of the Loch Ness Monster, not a monster, when they began to be reported in 1933, Spalding's account was published in the Scottish press saying, hey, there might be a connection, or it might even be the same creature. That was 300 years later. That's how long this guy's story has been around, and people have been talking about it. Alrighty, so Spalding said, all right, ready? In the month of June, there was seen in the River of Don a monster having a head like a great mastiff dog, and hands, arms, and paps like a man, and the paps seemed to be white. It had hair on the head, and its hinder parts was seen sometimes above the water, which seemed clubbish, short-legged, and short-footed with a tail. This monster was seen body-like swimming above and beneath the bridge without any fear. The townspeople of both Aberdeens came out in great multitudes to see this monster. Some threw stones, dick holes, some shotguns, bigger dick holes, and pistols, and the salmon fishers rowed cables with nets to try and catch it, but all in vain. It never sinked nor feared, but would duck under the water, snorting and bullering, terrible to the hearers. It remained 2 days and was seen no more, but it appears this monster came for no good token to noble Aberdeen, For sore was the same oppressed with great troubles that fell in the land. All right, calm the fuck down, dude. You guys were assholes to this creature that's just swimming around having a good time, and you can't be like, wow, look at that, that's so neat, we've never seen one of those before. No, you start throwing rocks at it and then shooting guns and then try to catch the damn thing, and now you're blaming it on the troubles of Aberdeen? I think you're the trouble with Aberdeen. Yeah, I said it. Take that. 1635 Aberdeen people. All right. For this next one, you guys all know about the Gloucester Sea Serpent. And if you don't, I did a whole episode about it. You should go listen to that after this one. It's okay. It's not like, you know, this is like a spoiler coming up. But it wasn't the only one that was spotted in New England. Maybe. I say maybe because this one is highly debated and maybe a hoax. But I don't think it is, but it's here. But you know what? It's for you to decide. So let's go to Lynn Harbor, September 5th, 1641. It was recorded by Obadiah Turner, whose diaries were published after he died. On September 5th, 1641, he wrote about an enormous serpent that had been seen by beachcombers off the coast of Lynn, bordering Massachusetts Bay, which has its own shoreline divided between Lynn Harbor and, Sean Bishop's going to hate me for this. I don't know how to say this. Nahant Bay? Sure, why not? Anyhow, Obadiah wrote, "Some being on ye great beach, gathering of clams and seaweed, which had been cast thereon by ye mighty storm, did spy a most wonderful serpent a short way off from the shore. He was as big around in the thickest part as a wine pipe, and they do affirm that he was 15 fathoms or more in length. A most wonderful tale, but ye witness be credible, and it would be of no account to them to tell an untrue tale. We have likewise heard Cape Ann, where people have seen a monster like unto this, which did there come out of the sea and code themselves upon the land, much to the terror of them that saw it." Something like that. Alrighty. So, again, you know, if you get through all of the ye's and the whips and the craps and all the way that he spelled everything, every freaking word wrong there, Obadiah. Yeah, it's this ginormous sea serpent-looking thing, basically very snake-like, 15 fathoms in length or more, as thick around as a wine pipe. So a big freaking thing. And he even mentioned it seems very similar to what they saw in Gloucester. All right, so why is this dead guy's diary, why is he so debated? Well, because a few historians think that they're 19th century forgeries. But I can't find anything to back that up, other than they didn't really come to light until way after 1641. But I think here's why I think it's real. Gloucester happened a couple hundred years later. I think it was like 1819, if I remember correctly. In the same area. Oh, wait, why is he talking about? Oh, Cape Ann is different than Gloucester. Oh, I apologize. He's not talking about the Gloucester one. He's talking about the one that happened at Cape Ann. I apologize. So there was two around that same time in 1641. Gloucester happened in, I think, like 1819, but there were dozens of these sightings in that area. Cape Ann, that Nahant's Egg Rock, whatever the hell that is. Again, tons of eyewitnesses, just like Gloucester. And in Gloucester, both Native Americans and settlers saw it. And then, get this, that was 1641, then 1819, it is 1819 for Gloucester. Then, in 1902, a sea serpent was seen in the exact same areas again. There were, in fact, dozens of sightings. So there's something in that area that just stuck around for a good couple of hundred years that would, you know, come into to the bays. People would see it and freak out, then it would swim out to sea again. Let's see, in July of 1902, the Daily Evening Item published an article titled "Sea Serpent Seen Off Nahant." Boy, that's going to be, I know it's wrong. Nahant, Nant, Nant. Sure, I'll say Nant. With the subhead, "Mrs. Laura Wagner Catches a Glimpse of the Monster of the Deep. The sea serpent has again reared its horrid head, and its inhabitants are nervously on the lookout for another glimpse of the monster of the deep. Her husband, her, and several of their friends said they saw it on a Friday evening that July. Another person named Eugene Brand and two of his friends said they saw it the following Monday morning. It was seen in repose, moving its enormous and slimy bulk through the water with dignity of age and reputation." All right, I like that ending. That was pretty cool. But I don't think it's fake just because it wasn't a one-off story. If it was only seen by Obadiah or the guy that Obadiah was writing about, sure, maybe, possibly. But it's been seen in that same area dozens and dozens of times throughout the centuries. So, like, I don't know what to think about that one, but it's cool. It's up for you to decide, so you decide. But before you decide, well, you can decide now. Go ahead. I'll give you a couple of seconds if you want to decide now. Let's see. Go ahead. All right, I need your answer. Wait, you need more time? All right, hold on. Think about it. Think long and hard. Sea serpent. Is it real? Did Kirk get the name of that town wrong? Probably. Oh, music. All right, time's up. Time's up. All right. What'd you say? I can't hear you because this is actually pre-recorded and it's not live, so I can't hear you. So with that, let's go to 1666 when German scholar Adam Olschlager was at Gottorp in northern Germany when people told him about a Scandinavian sea serpent from a Swedish nobleman who said he had received a sighting report from the Burgomaster of Malmo, also in Sweden, who claimed to have seen a sea serpent with a great number of loops while on the Norwegian coast overlooking the North Sea. Whew! Alrighty, so we got Olschlager, who heard it from a nobleman, who heard it from a burgomaster. So that's like three removed away. So you know this account is reliable. But good old Olschlager described the sighting in a 1666 catalog of the Holstein Gottorp cabinet. He said, "A person of distinction, a nobleman from Sweden, related here at Gottorp that he had heard the burgomaster of Malmo, a very worthy man, say that as he was once standing on the top of a hill, high hill towards the North Sea, he saw in the water, which was very calm, a snake, which appeared at that distance to be as thick as a pipe of wine." Well, that was just like a measuring tool back then, wasn't it? How big was he? Pipe of wine? Oh, that's big. "And he had 25 folds. Those kinds of snakes only appeared at certain times and in calm weather." There you go. Sounds like a sea serpent to me. Let's keep moving on. We got lots to get to. Let's go to 1687. To Dramsfjord, where Norwegian cleric and historian Johan Donaldson Ramus recorded in his Norri Regnum that a sea serpent had been seen in the Dramsfjord by a bunch of people. Now, it was described as a many-looped sea serpent, classified as possibly a super otter. Hold on. Let me repeat that last bit. Classified as possibly a super otter, which, you know, made me go, wait, there are super otters? Because regular otters are fucking cute enough. So what does a freaking super otter look like? Well, unfortunately, let me read you from this, and then you can make up your mind about super otters. We go to the cryptidarchives.fandom.com, which is the leading source for a super otter. No. The super otter is a Hvalsmen type of sea serpent reported from the coast of Norway until about 1848. Based on 28 sightings, of which he considered 13 certain and 15 probable, Bernard Hvalsmen described the super otter as a very large, flexible marine mammal similar to a seal or an otter with four distinct limbs and a tapering tail. He believed it lived in the icy Arctic waters, moving south into the Norwegian Sea in the summer. Although he considered them distinct for physiological reasons, they have noted similarities between the super otter and the many-humped sea serpents of the North Atlantic. Basically everything I've been telling you about up until this point. One of the type's foundational sightings, the Agades sea serpent, has also been repeatedly reinterpreted. He says that He thinks it's like some prehistoric otter, basically. Think of like if an otter and Nessie had a baby, that's what it would look like. So he says the super otter, alongside the merhorse, is one of the types invoked to explain a lot of the classic sea serpents of Scandinavia. So I was really hoping to find out that super otters were just something that was like real and everybody knew about and I didn't know about it. And then I could like go and pet like a super otter, maybe see like a super shell on its super otter belly. And it was like cracking the super shell and looking at me all cute. I could hold its hand. I guess not. Look, I just want a super otter. That's all I want. Where was I? Oh yeah. I was talking about, Jonas Danielsman's Ramus recording of the Dramsfjord super otter sea serpent. He said it was observed stretching and straightening itself out. Let's see. Anno 1687, a large sea snake. This is the story about it. Anno 1687, a large sea snake was seen by many people in Dramsfjord and at one time by 11 persons altogether. It was in very calm water. And so soon as the sun appeared and the wind blew a little, it shot away like a coiled cable that is suddenly thrown out by the sailors. And they observed that it was the sum time in stretching out its many folds. Yeah. What a cool. You saw a sea serpent. That's all cool. But you know what? Now I just want every sea serpent to be super otters. But until I get my super otter wish, we got to keep going. We got to move on. To 1697. That's right. I'm not even out of the 1600s yet, people. 1697 to Norway. When an unnamed Norwegian reverend who said that while he visited the Lofoten Archipelago off of northern Norway, he was told about a sea serpent which was seen near Lodingen and the Vestfjorden 3 years previously during the long polar summer. It was said, in the year 1700, a reverend ecclesiastic, being upon his stated visitation, the people of Lofoft acquainted him that year in 1697, a sea serpent passed along their coast towards Westfjorden, Lodingen, Senjan, and other parts, and that they had several times sight of it. Some have looked upon it this as a fiction, but above 20, I may have say 100 good eyewitnesses are living who all agree that they actually saw this vast monster for 3 weeks together in the middle of summer where there's continual light, the sun never setting, and the same credible inhabitants affirm of its length that it reached from the River Erwig to the Bognas Church near Altwig. All right, that one's cool. Whole lot of people saw it. Town's all talking about it. Even 3 years later, they're still talking about it and how huge this freaking thing was. But we've made it out of the 1600s. Let's go on to 1720 and Kobbervig, which is not to be confused with Sandvig. When Thorlak Thorlaksen... All right, Kurt here. That can't be a real name, right? That's a Marvel character's name. Well, anyhow, Thorlak Thorlaksen said that a sea serpent had appeared in a shallow inlet for a week in 1720. Yep. Not a minute, not an hour, not a day, but a whole freaking week, leaving behind a shed skin after returning to the sea. Here we go. Thorlak Thorlaksen has told me that in 1720, a sea serpent had been shut up a whole week in a little inlet into which it came by high tide through a narrow entrance of 7 or 8 fathoms deep, and that 8 days afterwards, when it left the inlet, a skin of a snake or a serpent was found. One end of the skin had entirely sunk in the water of the inlet, and no one could guess how long it was. The inlet, which the snake with the skin partly lay, being several fathoms deep. The other end of the skin was washed ashore by the current, where everybody could see it. Apparently, it could not be used, for it consisted of a soft, slimy mass. Yeah. All right. That's cool. Way to go, Thorlak Thorlaksen. Nobody could have kept, like, a little piece of it, though? You couldn't have put that in a jar and kept it? Show people that? No? All right. All right, let's keep with the weird names. Let's go to 1744... to Dagfinn Korsbeck. I swear someone's just fucking with me online. Dagfinn Korsbeck, who said he caught and released a, quote, monstrous fish that was like an armadillo at Sundmure. Now buckle up for this nonsense that is supposed to clear things up. Here we go. Want to clear things up about that story? According to Professor E. Silverston of Trondheim, this locality is the modern Sandmoor of Sunnisvilfjorden, one of the inner branches of the larger Storsfjorden. Anno 1744, when Dagfinn Korsbeck catched in the parish of Sundelsfelm on Sundmure a monstrous fish, which many people saw at his house. Its head was almost like the head of a cat. It had 4 paws, no tail. About the body was a hard shell like a lobster. Kurt here. That's a turtle. You caught a turtle. Have you people never seen a turtle in Storsfjorden or Sunnisvilfjorden? It's a fucking turtle. He said it purred like a cat. All right, that's kind of weird. And when they put a stick to it, it would snap at it. Yep, it's a turtle. Kurt here. That one's a turtle. Screw you. I'm moving on. Alrighty, let's go on to 1746 to Mjolnisset in the Ramsdalsfjord. Look, this is why it took me so long to do the sequel episode. Every name on this episode and every town name is made up to make me sound like I had a stroke. Anyhow, we're going to Mjolnisset in the Ramsdalsfjord, where the royal commander and pilot general of Bergen was a guy named Captain Lawrence von Ferry. Sure, who told him that he always doubted the existence of the sea serpent until encountering one and firing upon a specimen in 1746 near Mjolnisset in the Ramsdalsfjord. So, Captain Dickhead, don't fucking shoot sea serpents. You wanted to see one forever. You're like, oh, I don't believe in sea serpents. Holy shit, a sea serpent. I gotta kill it. Calm the crap down, people. Now, he sent a written statement describing the sighting alongside two of his sailors, Nicholas Peterson Copper and Nicholas Nicholson Engelwagen. Now, they sent it to the public court of justice at Bergen. Now, this is important because they were like, we're not crazy and we're willing to go on record. So the fact that they actually sent this to the court is, it really tells that they saw something that they didn't know what the hell it was. They said, the latter end of August in the year 1746, as I was on voyage on my return from Trondheim, on a very calm and hot day, having a mind to put in at Molde, must be a town, it happened that when we arrived with my vessel within 6 English miles of the aforesaid Molde, being at a place called Jule Naz, as I was reading in a book, I heard a kind of murmuring voice from amongst the men at the oars, who were 8 in number, and observed that the man at the helm kept off from the land. Upon this, I inquired what was the matter, and was informed that it was a sea snake before us. I then ordered the man at the helm to keep to the land again, and to come up with this creature of which I had heard so many stories. Though the fellows were under some apprehension, they were obliged to obey my orders, and in the meantime, the sea snake passed by us, and we were obliged to tack the vessel about in order to get nearer to it. As the snake swam faster than we could row, I took my gun that was ready charged and fired at it. On this, he immediately plunged under the water. We rowed to the place where it sunk down, which in the calm might be easily observed, and lay upon our oars, thinking that it would come up to the surface. However, it did not. Where the snake plunged down, the water appeared thick and red. Perhaps some of the shot might wound it, the distance being very little. The head of this snake, which had held more than 2 feet above the surface of the water, resembled that of a horse. It was a grayish color, and the mouth was quite black, and very large. It had black eyes and a long white mane that hung down from the neck to the surface of the water. Besides the head and neck, we saw 7 or 8 folds or coils of this snake, which were very thick, and as far as we could guess, there was about a fathom distance between each fold. I don't know how far a fathom is. I gotta look that up in a second. I relate this affair in certain company, where there was a person of distinction present who desired that I would communicate with him an authentic detail of what happened. For this reason, two of my sailors who were present at the time, the two Nicholases, shall appear in court to declare on oath the truth of every particular herein set forth. So basically, he was like, look, this freaking happened. You don't believe it? Here's two of the sailors who were there. They're going to show up in court because I can't. Let's see. A fathom is a unit of length equal to 6 feet. Oh, all right. That's cool. All right. That makes sense. Still big. Yeah, all right. Alrighty, so those two Nicholases then swore that the story was true before Procurator Roots. Basically, they went to court, and they said, yeah, it's all true. That's cool. The fact that they were willing to go to court to say, like, what we just said was 100% true is very telling that that's a real story. Alrighty. Let's move on to the Intrepid, to 1751. A letter was published in the American Journal of Science and Arts in 1820 by Captain George Little, who had seen his own sea serpent, but was actually telling the story of Joseph Kent of the Intrepid, who told him he too had seen a sea serpent in Broad Bay, Maine, in 1751. Huh, Maine, that's up in New England, right? There's already a bunch of sightings up there, right? Well, anyhow, his story says a monster of the above description of the gigantic black snake was seen in the same place by Joseph Kent of Marshfield, 1751. Kent said that it was longer and larger than the main boom of his sloop, which is 85 tons. He had a fair opportunity of viewing him, and when he saw it within 10 or 12 yards of his sloop. Short and sweet, but gets to the point. It's a big-ass freaking thing. He has a big-ass ship, and he was watching it for a while. Alrighty. Next up, 1753, a fisherman from Sundland reported seeing a seal-like sea monster, saying it was enormous in size with seal-like forequarters and a long tapering tail. He wrote, or it was written about, a fisherman at Sundland, 2 miles from Bergen, told me that he had once seen a much more surprising sea monster close to his boat. Having just taken a view of the fishing boat, it dived under the water immediately. This was not unlike a sea calf or seal, as to the forepart, and had furred skin. The body was so broad and big as a vessel of 50 last burthen, and the tail, which seemed to be about 6 fathoms long, so we just learned that's 6 times 6, got to do the math, 36 feet, was quite small, slender, and pointed at the end. Then, same year, Norway. Governor Benstrup claimed to have seen a sea serpent, and he made a sketch of the animal, which was estimated to be about 50 feet in length and looks a lot like what people think. You know, like when you think like old-timey sea serpent, boom, there you go. That's what he drew. He drew the old-timey sea serpent. Still, 1753. Masters Reutz and Teuschen of Heroy in Sunmore claimed to have seen sea serpents, that's right, plural, during their boat journeys to the local church. Then they saw the sketch from that last guy I just told you about and said, yep, that's what it looked like. Mr. Teuschen of Harrow is the only person of many correspondents I have that informs me that he observed the difference between the body and the tail of this creature as to its thickness. It appears that this creature does not, like the eel of land snake, taper gradually to a point, but the body, which looks to be as big as 2 hogsheads, grows remarkably small at once where the tail begins. The fuck does that mean? I don't even know. Still, 1753. Yep, that's right. 1753, a banner year for sea serpents. A report came out of a large marine serpent or snake with 4 legs. All right, Kurt here. So, not a snake because you just said 4 legs. Had been caught recently by the peasants of Sunmore and had been able to return to the sea when the peasants fled from it. That's all I could find out about that one. They caught the damn thing and then fled from it. So apparently don't catch a sea serpent. All right, let's move on to 1769. Naval officer Sir Charles Douglas interviewed local people of the Kraken and the sea serpent, trying to find out, is there anything to these, like, maritime legends? And he found that while none of the people believed in the Kraken, several people believed or claimed that they had actually seen a sea serpent. In particular, a Norwegian captain, summoned by a local Danish missionary, told Douglas that he had twice seen sea serpents off of Bergen. He said, he said that about 6 years before, he had seen 3 of them at once off Bergen. Floating upon the surface of the sea, 12 parts of the back of the largest appearing above water, each part in length about 6 feet, with intervals the same length, so that upon the whole, he judged the animal could not have been less than 25 fathoms long and about 1 in thickness, 6 feet around. He did not pretend to ascertain the dimensions of the other 2, further than them being smaller, and then one thus imperfectly described, he added that 4 years before he saw those, he had the exact same spot seen a large one, but could say nothing particular to its size. That's crazy cool. This dude's seeing them in, like, families. Which makes sense, because that's the one big thing that everybody brings up about Nessie, about Loch Ness. They're like, oh, we've been dead a long time ago. Maybe not. Maybe there are a family of them. And maybe they're not in the Loch Ness all the time. Maybe they are going out and about and coming around. Alrighty, all right, we're getting close to the being out of the 1700s. Let's go to Vancouver in 1791. And this might be the last one of the episode. Let's see. Yeah, I'll make this the last one. Let's go to Vancouver in 1791 for the final one of this episode. That's when an unidentified animal categorized as a sea serpent was seen off of Vancouver Island by American fur traders during the Pacific voyage of the Columbia Redviva? Sure. This sighting, which occurred during a hunting excursion to a cove in, Clayoquot Sound, was recorded by the ship's clerk, John Hoskin. He said, the 16th, I went out in a canoe, which Captain Kendrick purchased. Ooh, wonder if it's any relation to Anna Kendrick. Ooh, that's cool. I went out in a canoe, which Captain Kendrick purchased of the natives and made me a present of shooting. I left the ship Columbia early with intentions of seeing the village of Okormina in the sound. It was about noon before I arrived at Inistuk, before which a clever snug cove in which there were many geese, ducks, and teal sporting. Here I landed in an order to get a shot at them. One of the people that was with me also landed and, creeping along the edge of the bush, saw an animal which I conceived to be an alligator. The man was so agitated as to not be able to give me any description of what he had seen, than that it was a huge animal, very long, with a large mouth and teeth, the neck about as thick as a thigh, and so tapered to a tail with a black back and light yellow belly. I immediately repaired to the place where this animal had been seen, but could not get a sight of him. From his circumstance, I was induced to think it was only a burnt log, of which there are many about here. But the man said he saw the most frightful monster. That's kind of a dick move. Like, oh, you saw a log. Calm the hell down. I don't know, man. Sounds like he saw a sea serpent to me. All righty. With that, let's close up this. I mean, there's tons more. I haven't even made it to the 1800s yet, and I've probably got a good, I don't know, dozen or so more. But these names were just so difficult for me that let's call it a win that I'm still sober and that I kind of said a lot of this stuff correctly. See why it took so long to do this episode? It's crazy, right? There are so many stories, historical accounts, not just stories, but historical accounts of sea serpents and sea monsters and everything else. It's nuts to me, man. Hold on, let me see. Yeah, it's perfect. It's crazy to me. I love sea serpent stories, so I'll do another episode about sea serpents somewhere down the line. But once again, I'm your host, Kurt Sandig. This has been another edition of Paranormal Almanac. Oh, I forgot to ask you, what do you guys think? You think sea serpents are real? Yeah, of course you do. Listen to all those stories I just read you. Yeah, they're real. It's cool. Paranormal Almanac. Me, Kurt. Cool, bye.